Welcome to the Trinity Baptist Church podcast. For more information about our church and to keep up to date with the latest resources, please visit our website at www.trinitybaptist.org. Enjoy the podcast.
We have been on a road with Jesus, and as Pastor Les and I have been in this sermon series, we've been looking at this trek to Jericho and then to Jerusalem. Last week, as Jesus was approaching Jericho, he met this man who was blind, who had the desire to see. Lord, what is it that you want me to do for you? And today, Jesus will enter Jericho. And as he's passing through, he does see this wee little man, and a wee little man was he. And we are invited with Jesus to consider how this man sees, how Jesus sees this person, how the crowds saw all of this, and how we see ourselves in the midst of this weary and war-torn world. I was born in 1982, which doesn't like give me 100% license to call myself a child of the 80s, since I couldn't even talk through like half of it. But I do consider myself, because let's just be candid, the 80s is a much better decade than the 90s when it comes to pop culture. I do like to consider and claim for myself that I'm a child of the 80s. So though I have not yet read this book, I am furiously reading this book as quickly as I can, because I am geeked out for Ready Player One. Anybody there with me? Okay, nobody's there with me. That's okay. You will be after the sermon. Ready Player One, this incredible book that takes place in the future. It's a sci-fi kind of thing. But in the future, the internet is kind of this virtual reality world. And the guy that created and developed this was also a child of the 80s. And he has no family to inherit anything. So when he dies, this multi-billionaire says, all my wealth and the rights to the virtual reality internet, they call it the Oasis, will be to the winner of whoever can solve this great game, find this egg that I've hidden somewhere in the virtual reality internet. But to do it, you have to know 80s pop culture. So like, I'm all in, you know, I'm reading this book, I'm excited. Every 80s song, every 80s television show, every 80s film I could possibly imagine, and some I wasn't even aware of, I'm encountering through this book. Don't know how the movie's gonna be. It comes out in about a week, but you can be sure that I will be seeing that on Wednesday at the earliest time that it is possible to see it. And I got the book about 4 days ago, and I'm about 50% of the way through. So we're doing well. We're really stoked about it. But in this book, because everything takes place in this virtual reality, similar to our internet, the question that people have when they're building relationships with each other, when they're starting to invest in friendships or romantic relationships, really is this avatar that you've created, is this persona that you've placed in the virtual reality internet, is this really who you are? I can see this, and who I see looks incredibly appealing, looks like a person I would want to know and connect to, but what assurance do I have that what I'm seeing is actually who you are? We know this concern in the internet that we have today, but I think even before there was ever such a thing as the internet, we find ourselves wondering that about people. Can I really know that this friendship, can I really know that this partner of mine, whether that be in business or in romance, can I really know that who they say they are is actually who they are? We want to see beyond what our sight sometimes gives us the capability to see. We see this in our text. Jesus has entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. This is how Luke wants us to know. This is how the world sees him. This is how Luke wants us to begin seeing Zacchaeus. He's not just a tax collector. He is somehow a ruling tax collector, and he is wealthy. And if you've read the whole Gospel of Luke, I kind of wanted to take the sermon and just really take us through all of Luke, but I knew you would rebel on me in about 20 minutes into that. But in the Gospel of Luke, as just a heads up, probably more so than any other gospel, if you are wealthy, things don't typically work out very well for you. The Gospel of Luke tends more than any other gospel to say, hey, if God has given you incredible resources, God requires a lot from you of those resources. Those resources aren't just meant for you. They are meant to be a blessing to the world. You are to use your resources, your privilege, your power, your access to invite more people to the table, to ensure that God's justice comes, so that as Jesus says in one place in the Gospel of Luke, people don't have to say, is the kingdom of heaven over there or is it over here? They will say, it is in your midst. Because this is how the Gospel of Luke views the proper use of the gifts that God has given us. That we partner with God to say, Lord, whatever it is that you have placed in me in terms of passion, in terms of time, in terms of ability, in terms of resources, I am offering to you so that your kingdom can be expanded, so that people can see outposts of your hope, of your truth, of your love, of your compassion, of your justice being brought into the world. This is how the Gospel of Luke understands wealth and power. So when we hear this story, because most of the wealthy people Jesus encounter in the Gospel of Luke, they're not doing that with their wealth. They're not doing that with their power. And so it doesn't tend to go well for them. So everything is set up in this story for us to think, uh-oh, we know how this is gonna go. But then we find out that Zacchaeus wanted to see who Jesus was. But because he was short, and we're not sure if this is short in stature, that works best for the song, or if it's just because he was short in like social stature, because as a tax collector, he wouldn't have been someone that people were just trying to part the way for in a crowd. But for whatever reason, he was short, and he could not see Jesus. So he runs ahead and climbs this sycamore tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. There you are. There they are. I think in every single one of us, there is this desire, this longing to be reconnected to ourselves, to be reconnected to our friends, our family, the human community, to be reconnected to God. And Zacchaeus seems deeply aware of this, and we don't know all that's going on in his heart, but we know that somehow he's aware that this guy is passing through his hometown, and he might be able to see Zacchaeus, and Zacchaeus wants to see him in a way that could bring transformation into his story and into his world. And so Zacchaeus goes to great lengths to try to see Jesus in a way that others in this crowd were perhaps not wanting him to see. And then Jesus will see Zacchaeus in a way that nobody in Zacchaeus's life has yet to see him. It reminds me of this scene in the Steven Spielberg film Hook, where Peter Pan has grown up as an adult, and none of the Lost Boys, when he returns to Never Never Land, can seem to see that he is in fact their former leader, Peter Pan, until this moment. Thank you.
There you are, Peter.
This little child, and didn't someone say we should have faith like little child? This little child is able to see in Peter Banning, who really has been Peter Pan, what others were unwilling or unable to see. He was a slightly overweight, not great vision, you know, like life does to all of us, was, you know, not looking like his spry. I don't know exactly how old Peter Pan was when he was Peter Pan, but 11 or 10 or whatever year old self. He's not looking like that anymore. And so everything that everyone would have thought about him is to say, there's no way that's Peter Pan. But this little child, one of the youngest of the lost boys, is willing to take a closer look. And it takes some effort. Did you notice? It wasn't like he just walked up and said, "There's Peter." He has to really look. And he takes a deeper and deeper look. And then all of a sudden, it's like the lights come on. "There you are. Under all of this, I can see who you are in this story, Peter Pan." But I think in the story in the Gospel of Luke, Jesus sees Zacchaeus, and he doesn't see hated tax collector. He doesn't see a person that, oh, he's wealthy. He must be misusing his wealth and his power and his access. Jesus sees through all of that, and he says, "This is a child of God." He'll say later, "This is a son of Abraham." He sees through all the things that the crowds were unwilling or unable to see through. And he tells him, "Zacchaeus, I'm going to your house. You're going to welcome me today. I'm spending the night. I don't need a reservation at Holiday Inn or Motel 6. I'm coming to be with you." And the crowds begin to freak out. This past week, I encountered a story I did not know about a woman I was somewhat familiar with, Ida B. Wells, or Ida B. Wells Barnett. She was a trendsetter, a civil rights leader, a suffragist wanting the right for women to be able to vote and just for all of women's rights and equality. She was born, as many of you probably know, as a slave, but a couple of years after she was born, the Emancipation Proclamation came out, and she helped to found the NAACP. But something I did not know about her until this week is that a large part of her effort and work was in being present at and investigating the stories and the moments when African Americans were being lynched. She compiled these stories called The Southern Horror, that was these accounts of all of the lynchings she had either gone to investigate after the fact, and several of them that she had been present at while they were happening. She said that she did it because she wanted to be able to tell the story of these people who were hanging in a tree who otherwise would have no one to see them and remember them and to tell their story. And so, in what I can't even imagine must have been immense pain to have to not only investigate this, and some people consider her to be sort of on the vanguard of some of the early investigative journalism, but to also at times be present while this was happening. She said, "I want to be a witness to be able to see people, to remember them, to tell their stories with the hope that this will not continue in the world." I didn't know that part about her, but the reason I heard this on a podcast I was listening to was because the New York Times realized that they, when she finally died, did not remember her. That she had not had an obituary in the New York Times. This vanguard national leader had been overlooked. This person who sought to see others was not seen by some of the largest institutions of her day. And Luke tells us all the people saw this and began to mutter, "He has gone to be the guest of a sinner." The crowds disparage Jesus for his choice to connect with Zacchaeus, to look beyond the labels that they were comfortable with, and to say, here is a person created in the image of God. Here is someone who is open to what I am doing in the world. Here is someone who could be a partner with me, who might want relationship with me, who might be open to a new start with me. The crowds couldn't see any of that, and so they just begin to mutter and mumble. I was also not aware that in Ida B. Wells' life, she was eventually ostracized from organizations like the NAACP because they just didn't like how brash and in-your-face her leadership style was. They wanted something a little bit more toned down. And so Ida B. Wells was not remembered. To this day, right now, one of her descendants, her great-great-grandchild, I believe it is trying to get a monument in Chicago where Ida B. Wells Barnett died to finally remember her and tell her story. I wonder for us, do we think Jesus remembers us, that he sees us, that he invites us despite our sin, despite our brokenness, despite the ways we have failed one another and failed God? Do we believe that Jesus sees us and doesn't see us primarily in the ways we would want to name ourselves in terms of failure and disappointment, but sees us with that look of divine love and names us and says, "Would you welcome me into a relationship of transformative love in your life? Because if so, it could change everything." Zacchaeus does invite Jesus into his house, and we go on to read that Zacchaeus begins to change, not just his heart. He doesn't do a walk down the aisle only, "I'm placing my faith in you today, Jesus," but he gets out his checkbook or his giving app or whatever it is. He starts talking to charities, his wallet. He's like, "Hey, Jesus, if what you're saying is real, if who you are is what I think it is that you are, then I want to leverage all that I have in concrete actions of restorative justice in the world to be a part of what you are doing to bring the kingdom of God near." I would wager that many people in this room have said yes to Jesus a long time ago. But what are the things in our hands that Jesus is saying, "Would you open those up and give them to me? Set them before me. Trust that I haven't left this world, that I am still active here, and I am looking for you to enter into this transformative, dynamic relationship with me so that we can bring the kingdom of God to this earth." Ultimately, we know that will never be fully done, but Jesus invites us to lean and live into it until his coming again. One of my favorite TV shows, probably just because I live in Texas, is the TV show Friday Night Lights. And in the first season of Friday Night Lights, this team that looked by all experts at the beginning of the year to be destined to play for a state championship suffers a major setback because their star quarterback, who is for sure going to be a starting college quarterback the next year for a major D1 program, is injured early on. And yet this team goes through adversity and makes their way all the way to the state championship. But the first half of the state championship game does not go well, and Coach Taylor is talking to them at the halftime in this clip that we're about to watch.
Jason Street went down the first game of the season. Everybody wrote us off. Everybody.
And yet here we are at the championship game. 40,000 people out there have also written us off. There are a few out there who do still believe in you. Few'll never give up on you. You go back out on the field, those are the people I want in your minds. Those are the people I want in your hearts.
Every man at some point in his life is going to lose a battle. He's going to fight and he's going to lose. But what makes him a man is that in the midst of that battle, he does not lose himself. This game is not over. This battle is not over.
So let's hear it one more time, together. Clear eyes, full hearts. Let's go!
Every one of us has stumbled, has fallen. Scripture calls that sin, brokenness. We can do our best to reform our lives and to reform the world, but ultimately we find that our best efforts fall short. And Jesus is on his way from Jericho to Jerusalem to say, what you are unable to do in your own power, I will do in the sacrificial, redemptive power of laying my life down. And he invites you and me to see anew, to see our situation, no matter how hopeless or frustrating or challenging it may be, to see perhaps your marriage or your career, no matter what the obstacle that may seem insurmountable at this moment might be, anew through the hope of his redemptive life. He doesn't want us to get caught up in what the crowds are telling us, or perhaps even what we are telling ourselves. And I think a little bit like Coach Taylor would just say, it's time for you to allow me to give you clear eyes and a full heart and to know with my resurrection power, you can't lose. Jesus invites us into his hope, into his power. It comes through living, dynamic relationship with him. Perhaps you've never done that. In a few moments, I would love to pray with you about what it means to say, I am turning over control of my life away from self and towards God. He will become the rescuer and leader of my life. I need that.
We hope you enjoyed your segment of the Trinity Baptist Church podcast. For more information about our church and to keep up to date with the latest resources, please visit our website at www.trinitybaptist.org.